The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to another episode of Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal. I'm your host, Chauncey Haworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So, first off, Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters and Singular Fortean reports that multiple witnesses in the Chicago area have spotted a toddler-sized bat creature galloping across the ground on its wings in a style reminiscent of vampire bats. These reports come after several years of winged humanoid sightings in the area, drawing comparison to the legendary Mothman. The question hangs in the air like some sort of convalescent bat infant. Are they breeding? Because that sounds real cute, not going to lie. Researchers in China have created chimpanzees who perform more effectively on tests by introducing human genes for intelligence in utero. Brain size was unaffected. This is not actually the first experiment along these lines, since hybrid monkey-human brains, are extremely useful for studying Alzheimer's, among other things, but this may have been the most brazen chimera experiment to date, performed in China, where questions of ethics are not usually brought into the laboratory. Finally, scientists believe they may have solved the mystery of missing ships in the Bermuda Triangle. Roughly bounded by Miami, Puerto Rico, and Bermuda, the triangle may experience rogue waves of up to 1,000 feet high, according to scientists at the University of Southampton. Yes, Chauncey's eyes just bugged out, for those of you who are listening, audio only. Apparently, the possibility of multiple tropical storms coming together from different directions may be a recipe for unusual and catastrophic phenomena in water and in the air. And lastly, in lifestyle news, I made my first serious attempt with a Ouija board this weekend with a friend. We summoned a ghost who purported to have killed his mother shortly before World War I and was thrilled to get the chance to return to Earth and brag about it. The ghost said it would speak on the record, but declined to give its name. It concluded the session by laughing maniacally and threatening this reporter. Happy Halloween, I guess. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right, I'm not sure where to start with this one. Toddler-sized vampire bats. You know, sure. You ever seen a fruit bat?
Yeah, flying foxes.
Yeah, that thing's like toddler size. That thing's huge.
It is, yeah. But it's not a vampire bat.
No.
Vampire bats are, they kind of have to be small because their whole, you know, modus operandi is to land on mammals unnoticed.
Not anymore.
Yeah, I think I would notice a toddler-sized winged bat creature landing on my back, but,
yeah,
you know.
Totally. I mean, my kids have been sucking the life out of me for, like, 18 years, I don't know. Yeah, that's some wild business right there, but, I mean, why not, you know?
Why not? That's where you're going with that.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously, bats can get that big. Flying foxes are bats.
Yeah. So maybe that's all it is. Maybe it's a flying fox loose in the Chicago area, which in itself would be pretty interesting. But the thing is, flying foxes don't move that way. Vampire bats have this, you know, particular method of locomotion where they kind of spring across the ground on their wings.
Oh, really?
If you've ever seen a vampire bat run, well, first off, you'll have nightmares for a while. Like, you will require therapy if you see that, because it's terrifying.
Right.
But that's kind of what was described by these witnesses.
Huh.
No one actually saw this thing flying. So maybe someone, you know, dressed up their dog in, like, a bat costume.
Right.
Or, you know,
it was a, like,
for funnies.
Chihuahua with a head injury halfway in a black plastic bag. It's all, somebody help me, please.
And everyone's like, oh, God, what is that thing?
Yeah, totally. All right, the monkey apocalypse, you know,
right?
That is exactly what went on, at least in the reboot of Planet of the Apes.
Right, you know? Yeah, so I found the article of this, and the cover picture was obviously just a picture from the reboot Planet of the Apes.
Oh, that's funny, because we used one from the original, but that's my style. You know?
Yeah, you've got to. So I it was from, what was it, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right.
The sort of prequel one where they explain how it happened.
Angry Caesar. Angry look on season.
I never watched it, but yeah.
Oh, really? They're great.
Really?
Yeah, they're great.
Oh,
even the originals are great.
They look, I don't know, lame. But maybe I should watch it to, you know, get a blueprint for how the next few years are going to go.
Yeah, you don't even know how scared you should be at this point.
No, I don't, but I was, I read this, no, that's, first of all, no one would be that stupid.
Right, who the hell?
We've seen movies.
Right.
You know, like, what are they trying to do? And then I read Alzheimer's research. Okay, that's noble.
Right.
But it...
Well, I mean, if movies have taught us anything, it's we shouldn't mess with this stuff. Like in that one movie where they messed with the sharks and made them super smart by trying to kill Alzheimer's with shark brains.
Is that a movie?
Yeah. Deep Blue Sea.
Wow, okay. They were actually trying to cure Alzheimer's with shark brains?
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. It was worse than Megalodon. The Meg? It was worse than the Meg.
Well, that in itself is a serious violation of scientific ethics.
Yeah.
If they're doing anything, you know, that could even possibly become worse than Megalodon.
Right. No, I mean worse than the movie.
No, I know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, totally.
Like, you have to think about your responsibility as a researcher.
Right, totally.
Is the apocalypse you're heading humanity towards hackneyed and awful?
Right.
You know, you got to think about these things.
Well, I have this argument towards musicians a lot. You know, people will be all, oh, did you see what he did on the guitar? That was amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but just because he could, really, should he have?
Exactly.
You know? Maybe you should have, you know, played something classy. And then finally, the Bermuda Triangle. I don't know. It doesn't explain any of the planes. I guess 1,000 feet, maybe it does.
Well, no, probably not. But rogue waves are caused by high winds.
Yeah.
So one would think that might, and they're caused not just by high winds, but by like unusual patterns of crosswinds that you don't necessarily get in most places. So it's reasonable to me that, you know, pilots might fly in there and be like, what is happening? The plane was not built for, you know, whatever's happening here.
And Rogue Wave is also a pretty good synth wave artist.
Oh, is it?
So there's that.
I was just kind of gathering that I meant the ocean phenomenon from context clues, but that could have meant the synth artist.
Right.
He's just paddling around there in a canoe,
right,
in a wetsuit, just sabotaging boats, shooting down planes.
And we don't have too much more time before our interview, but so when you did this thing, I don't know, did you get the sense that something was really going on, or were you...
Well, I don't know. I didn't feel like I was, like, influencing the planchette.
Do you think she was?
I don't think so. Because a lot of the answers to her questions were just gibberish.
I see.
You know, it was just kind of meandering around, and it was not at all clear
what was meant. Was, it was highly premeditated.
Yeah, but we did get some eerie answers. Like, we asked, you know, are you happy to be back on Earth? Yes. You know, why are you here? To grieve. Okay, that's creepy. Grieve what? My mom. And then it's like, how did your mom die? All this stuff. And then eventually we're like, okay, your mom was killed at a young age. That's terrible. Who did it? And then it was just I.
All right.
Like, okay.
Yeah, that's some stuff,
that's
man.
Fun.
Yeah.
So, classic Ouija board. This was last night, so I haven't heard from my friend.
Well, nobody goes on a Ouija board to have somebody be all, I lived to the ripe old age of 90 and died in my sleep.
Yeah, it's just like, you know? Get out of here, Gerald.
Right, yeah, nobody wants that. All right,
put
we're coming
crazy
up.
Crazy cousin on.
We're coming up on our guest here. We have an interview that Karen and I recorded earlier this week with Brian Forrester talking about ancient technology in Egypt. We had to pre-record it. Because he's from out of the country and out of the hemisphere, too. So come on back. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with our guest, Brian Forrester.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
I'm Carlene Niver, and I have some exciting news about my restaurant, Deja Vu, voted best breakfast. We are now serving beer and wine to complement your experience with us. Try one of our many flavors of mimosas, or try one of our new delicious creations, like Morning Sunshine, our version of a screwdriver. For our coffee lovers, we are known for our cozy atmosphere with a mixture of traditional and specialty drinks. I invite you to start your day with us, whether you are craving breakfast or lunch. Located in the historic Lorenz Hotel in the heart of downtown Reading, on California Street, open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Hi, this is Linda Bott, and let me tell you about our North State Now show on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR. The first Thursday of the month will be yours truly, covering arts and entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. The second Thursday will be Michelle Slade, highlighting and interviewing North State heroes. The third Thursday is James Masada and Rhonda Alvey, bringing you all things with Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. And the fourth Thursday from Shasta Regional Medical Center is Dr. Orna Gill, covering all things women's health. The title sponsor for North State Now is the Reading Civic Auditorium. Also brought to you by the Black Bear Diner, Shasta Regional Medical Center, and Carlene's Restaurant and Bar, located at 1100 Center Street. That's North State Now, right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. 6 p.m., North State Now.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
To Radio Wasteland, and our guest Brian Forrester. Today we're talking about Egyptology, and Brian, I know you've been on the show before, but I recently saw a video with you where you were doing like a seminar about Egyptology, and basically talking about the pyramids and how they were built and when they were built, and I thought it was very informative and just awesome information on that, and I was really kind of hoping to talk to you more about it so that we could elaborate on it.
Sure, sounds good.
Well, there's a colossal difference between the two because the the dynastic work, a lot of it is located in middle to southern Egypt, like around Thebes and down towards Aswan. And there you see temples like Karnak, where the dynastic aspect of it, the columns, for example, are made of stones that are stacked on top of each other, almost like Tootsie Rolls.
whereas the pre-dynastic, the columns are one solid piece of stone, and the difference in the stone is that the dynastic work tends to be limestone and sandstone, which are relatively soft, whereas the pre-dynastic tends to be granite, which is much, much harder. So it's basically night and day when you look at the structures.
Right. So, you know, I guess one argument could be made is that that they got smart and used easier rocks. But, you know, was the granite more easily accessible, or was it further away? So I guess what I'm saying is one idea could be that close to them was the difficult rocks to work with, and then they discovered the easier ones and started bringing those in. You know, how did that... Do you get what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, it's actually the opposite. Where you find a lot of the limestone and sandstone constructions, the quarries tend to be quite close together or quite close to the actual sites. But when it comes to the granite's only found in two locations. One is Aswan, which is at the very southern edge of Egypt, and the other is in the Sinai Desert, which is in northern Egypt on the eastern side. So in some cases, the granite had to be moved 100-plus miles to the actual location of where the constructions were.
I see. So, yeah, and then back to my earlier question, was it a gradual, so like in the case of, I think peoples in South America, there seemed to be a time where the things were built and then everything was vacated and then people came back in, as opposed to a time that's sort of a gradual change. Was this the case in Egypt? Because we're seeing older structures that are built differently and newer structures that are built differently. Was there a gap in between where people weren't there, or was this a gradual change from one to the other?
No, there was an abrupt shock to both areas and other locations on the planet as well. So there's mounting evidence that there were a series of cataclysmic events that happened between 12,700 and 11,600 years ago. So we think that most of the megalithic construction, whether it's in Peru or Bolivia or Petra in Jordan or Egypt, that's all pre-cataclysmic. And then several thousand years passed where the land was actually not even habitable. And then all of a sudden you had the rise of cultures like the dynastic Egyptians in Egypt and then the Inca in Peru.
Like they came back in and rediscovered what was there.
Well, it was probably somebody else. The mystery is who were the megalithic builders. And, of course, the conjecture is a lost civilization, possibly Atlanteans, or, you know, possibly aliens did that work. And then you had the famous civilizations come in and rise in those locations.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because that's the weirdest part to me, is the gap. You know, it's like, we're looking at a huge gap, which, you know, is right around the Ice Age, so it makes you wonder. You know, a big interest of mine has always been how, so for all conservative estimates, we've been humans like we are now on the planet for about 150,000 years, and so how for 140,000 years there was like nobody built a city, you know, nobody did anything more than fire and a stick, you know, it's like, it seems like a very long time for a lot of things to happen and then go away.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there are some that believe that these cataclysms actually happen about every 13,000 years. So there could have been many cultures that rose and didn't fall. They were collapsed over the course of time.
Right.
I mean, there are lots of like cataclysms kind of like that throughout history. I'm wondering if maybe the scale is different here as compared to something like the Minoan eruption, where, you know, that obviously caused some cultures to fall and other cultures to rise, but it sounds like this is on a much more massive scale.
Yeah, like global, as in something came into our solar system and created, like throughout the solar system, finally impacting our planet and absolutely decimating the environment.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's frustrating that I'm sure your line of work is frustrating, that knowing that you're going in and looking at things that are slowly going away, and once they're gone, they become exponentially more difficult to explain. You know, the archaeology and history in general, especially history, prehistory, before really sort of good notes were taken, you know, it becomes, every day that passes, it seems like it becomes more difficult to explain, other than the rise of technology, of course.
Well, the great thing is that more and more sites are being discovered thanks to new technology like LIDAR, which can penetrate rainforests and things like that. So there is the potential of some more major discoveries. And the great thing about Egypt is the new head of the Supreme Council of Antiquities is actually opening up places that are very enigmatic and mysterious that previously were not open to the general public. So that's, in the case of Egypt, it's actually getting much, much better.
You know, I've always been surprised about this. I think we covered this a little bit on the last show, but why are Egyptologists so closed to new ideas? You know, is it that they're so closely associated with what they would deem as crackpot theories? Or is it because they're so ingrained in the money that they're making, or because somebody is shutting them down? I don't really understand why a scientist or why a historian or why any of these people would sort of shut down new ideas or these anomalous concepts. I don't understand why they would do it.
Well, the difficulty is that they base their entire careers and also the people who they learn from on a certain paradigm, and it's difficult for them to break themselves away from that. But what's good is now we're getting more into multidisciplinary approaches at looking at these ancient megalithic sites. So we have geologists who come, we have engineers and architects and even stonemasons who come, and they look at the megalithic structures, and I haven't had one person be able to state that, for example, that the dynastic Egyptians could have built the Great Pyramid, or that the megalithic work we see in and around Cusco, Peru, could have been made by the Inca. So that's a very positive thing that's going on. And I think the younger academics are more open-minded to looking at actually what is the hard science of what it is we're studying.
Yeah, I would guess that the younger academics being more open-minded to this stems from the way that they're learning, where it's not so necessarily hands-on with a specific teacher, but maybe more so internet technology-driven, where they don't make these necessary associations to the mouth that it's coming from.
Or just because they're a new generation and they don't have the ingrained ideas. I think it was Max Planck who said science advances one funeral at a time, and he said that in like the 20s or something. I mean, I'm serious.
I totally agree with you.
You know, the older people are bad at learning things. You know, the older generation has its ideas, and eventually they die out, and the younger generation is, you know, willing and perhaps eager to embrace new ideas.
Yeah, no,
I'm guessing. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but
no, I think that's probably pretty accurate. What's your take, Brian?
Yeah, no, very true, because the internet is a very recent development, and on it you have YouTube, where it's not just me making videos. Now it's, you know, I know a number of different people who are researching the same locations that I go to, and they're all coming up with the same explanation and answer that, you know, these things are very mysterious. They require very advanced technology to build, and therefore the cultures attributed to their construction could not have done it, and they simply inherited what it is that they found.
All right, well, that's a good segue. We're coming up on our first break. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. When we come back, I want to talk about some of these technologies and what makes us convinced either that they are or are not more advanced than what we're thinking. You're listening to Brian Forrester here on Radio Wasteland.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
The United States Marine Corps is celebrating its 244th birthday, Sunday, November 10th at the Wind River Casino and Resort. All are invited to attend this year's ceremony, which includes dinner and dancing, and enjoy the traditional ceremony, including presentation of the birthday cake, honoring the oldest and youngest Marine, missing in action remembrance, the pipes and drums, and music to dance to. Contact Mike Gutierrez at 530-524-7595 for invitations and more information. The 244th United States Marine Corps birthday. Hoorah!
Pirate secret to the rescue. Pirate secret to the rescue. Pirate secret to the rescue. Pirate secret's gonna rescue you.
Pirate Secret essential oils can be purchased in Reading at Orchard Nutrition, Enjoy the Store, Country Organics, in Chico at SS Produce, Arcata in Wildberries, and online at piratesecret.com.
Ukulele master Jake Shimabukuro returns to Reading's historic Cascade Theater for an evening of energetic and passionate performance, Friday, October 18th. Jake Shimabukuro takes the ukulele across the music spectrum to places no one could have ever imagined. Don't miss this ukulele virtuoso at the Cascade Theater, October 18th. Get tickets now at 530-243-8877 or cascadetheater.org.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearms specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard to find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Brian Forrester. We are talking about Egyptology. We're talking about Egypt in general, mainly the pyramids and the technologies behind them. Carrie, you had a question?
Yeah, you just said something really interesting last segment. You said that the cataclysm was, you know, not just confined to Earth, but throughout the solar system, if I'm understanding that right. Do we have evidence of, like, similar cataclysms on other planets, or you know, how does that work? Because this is the first time I've heard of it. It's amazing.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I think as far as I know, Venus is actually rotating backwards, which makes sense because, you know, in the creation of the solar system, everything should be, you know, once the balance occurred with the planets, then everything should be rotating in a very similar pattern. I think the planet Uranus is rotating on its side.
Yes.
And then, of course, you have the you also have the asteroid belt, which probably was a planet that could have been hit directly by this force that came from outside the solar system.
Wow. And they're suggesting that that happened so recent in the past as potentially 12,000 years ago.
Yeah, but between 12,700 and then, like you see in a movie, it was like more than 1,000 years of this disruption to happen.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it absolutely is amazing. All right, let's talk about a little bit about the technology. So it seems, you know, there's a lot of science that when it's shown to me, I look at it and I say, well, it's obviously this. But, you know, in a world of people who believe in flat Earth, obviously science, what we see with our eyes isn't enough, because a lot of the time they walk out the front door and say, duh, the Earth is flat. You know, so I look at the machine marks on these things, and when it's pointed out to me by a person like you, I look at it and go, yeah, that looks like it was done with a machine. But I'm also know nothing about rocks or machines for the most part. You know, so it's like, what really convinces us that this was machine marking and not one hell of a chisel?
Well, let's see. Actually, my knowledge is based on the work of engineers and machinists who have looked at the actual cutting marks, and all of them have stated that it had to have been done, especially in Egypt, where it's the most obvious, with machines. So we see circular saw marks, we see straight saw marks, we see like drill holes all over the place, all in very hard stone like basalt and granite, which would require at a minimum diamond level technology. And that wasn't invented until the 1860s. So people keep coming up with this recurring thing that the Egyptians had copper tubes, and they used probably silica sand or something like that in order to do it. But the penetration rate in the case of the drill holes and some of the saw marks is 500 times more efficient than what we have today.
Oh, yeah, that is. That is absolutely...
That's pretty mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling, and I find the whole of it really quite... One thing that confuses me is over the years we've seen the large megalithic stones and what you had referred to as pellowing. And sometimes I see this and I think, okay, well, maybe that's erosion that made a pellow like that. Or in other things, people are trying to say that it was somehow melted that way. In the case of Egypt and the pyramids, you know, what is this pellowing and what are we seeing there?
Well, we don't really see the pillowing that much in Egypt. The temple, which is close to the Great Pyramid, is somewhat polygonal in nature. And again, it's granite. It's a very hard stone. And multi-ton blocks, again, having to have come from the Aswan Quarry, which is like 500 miles away. But it's more in Peru where we see the real polygonal, which means multiple angle stone, and it does look like marshmallows pushed together. Every stone is a different shape and size, and each one interlocks with the other. It's a three-dimensional interlocking of the stone. They're not simply stacked on top of each other. So that's technology easily beyond our capability, because you just look at it and you go, This is crazy how this was done. Why would you bother to do it? But obviously, whoever did the work, that was the level of their technical capability, and they decided that's how we're going to, you know, this is how we build.
Well, so that raises a good question, because
go ahead. Okay.
Why would they bother to do any of this? Like, you know, the people with this advanced technology, you know, what are we thinking for that?
Yeah, well, the polygonal walls in, especially the ones in Peru, every stone is a different shape and size, and they three-dimensionally interlock with each other. So that would obviously, you know, the standard answer is, well, the Inca did that because it made it earthquake-proof, but it's probably far more complicated than that. A, the Inca couldn't have done the work because they couldn't work in granite. And because they were a Bronze Age culture, and you need at least very hardened tool steel to work with granite at all. But if you had machines, it would be even better. And the other thing is that that's what makes Peru more complicated than Egypt, because in Egypt we see the saw marks and drill holes and things like that. But in Peru, we see almost no tool marks whatsoever. So it's like they were able to make the stone like marshmallow-like material and almost or basically push the stones together. So that's why there's no gaps in between, except for later earthquakes that did partially damage some of the structures.
Now, here's something I don't totally understand. So, like, these people have the technology to do these amazing things with stone that we can't do. But, you know, they didn't add climate control or glass windows or, you know, a power source or solar panels or anything like that to these structures. So were these structures sort of decorative structures, or would that stuff not have survived? Like, what's the thinking there?
Well, that's the intriguing thing. What happens is that when you have a structure that's made of solid stone like that, where all the pieces interlock, mm-hmm. with one another, it probably creates a different vibration or energy inside the structure itself. Mm-hmm. So that tells you that the structures were used for some kind of vibratory or energetic purpose originally, and then later were adopted by the cultures like the Inca for ceremonial purposes. So that's still something that we're working on, is to what was the original function of these amazing works that we see.
Yeah.
So over the years, we've seen things that have basically tried to say that the pyramids were generating energy, some sort of power source or something like that. Is there anything backing that other than sort of science fiction wishful thinking?
Not really. When you... Again, when you look at the megalithic works in Egypt, like the Great Pyramid System, of which there are basically eight of them, the original pyramids that were constructed, then later you see the dynastic people making pyramids out of mud bricks, so the whole technology has gone backwards. Mm-hmm. And then you have the obelisks. And the obelisks, again, each one is one single piece of granite stone. The largest one that was never completed would have been 1,200 tons. It's still in the quarry in Aswan. So the belief that I have and some others have is that the Great Pyramid System were creating energy of some kind. I don't think it was electricity necessarily, but some kind of vibrational energy. And they were the transmitters. And then the obelisks were strategically set up in very specific locations as the receiving stations.
But this is beyond us even understanding how that would potentially work. This is us just reverse engineering something that's... Or do we have any parallels today that would be associated with this?
Well, Wi-Fi would be a very simple example of that. Mm-hmm. I think this was Wi-Fi vibrational technology on a very industrial kind of scale.
I see.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So, you know, before we come to the end of talking about the Egypt portion of this, you know, what's your take? You know, a lot of people going towards aliens, that's a popular one, going towards ancient technologies or even lost more recent technologies. You know, what's your take? Or do you even have one? Do you try to avoid a take?
Well, I'm actually, honestly, it depends on the location again. In the case of Egypt, I'm looking more and more towards it being an alien construction of some kind. But then in Peru, with the polygonal, almost playful-looking form of construction, that looks much more human to me. So I believe there are at least two or three different very advanced civilizations that were doing constructions in different parts of the world. We also have a place called Pumapunku in the highlands of Bolivia, and that's completely different in the way that it was built. And it, again, looks like it was hit by a very massive series of cataclysms, because the stones were literally thrown off in different directions.
Wow. All right. You've been listening to Brian Forrester here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back. We got some more.
SST Oil on Windham Lane in Reading, your source for specialty fuels and oils, including kerosene and low-sulfur fuel oil. They feature Toyotomi heating systems and on-demand water heaters. Save $100 on a new Toyotomi home water heater and ask about special savings for residents affected by the car fire. Locally owned SST Oil, supporting the community through summer fires and winter snows. Stay warm and cozy with Toyotomi and SST Oil. 241-1167. 241-1167.
Get your car squeaky clean at Quick and Clean Car Wash in downtown Reading. Quick and Clean Car Wash on the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros is open 7 days a week. Fast and convenient, you don't even have to get out of your vehicle. And they even towel dry your vehicle. They accept cash or card with no extra charge. Quick and Clean Car Wash, located at 1210 Market Street, downtown Reading. 530-243-4211.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge with Brad Dacus.
A Christian Finnish politician is under pre-trial investigation for an alleged, quote, hate crime. You see, the politician went to Facebook to post a Bible verse that opposes same-sex relationships to condemn the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Finland's LGBT support.
Stay informed on religious freedoms. Receive our weekly email newsletter, The Legal Insider, at pji.org.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at RadioWasteland.us.
Hi, welcome back to Radio Wasteland with our guest Brian Forrester. We're talking about, we were talking about Egypt and we were talking about ancient civilizations, so on and so forth. But now I want to talk to you a little bit about coming back from Turkey, because it's interesting, all these comparative ancient civilizations, when you look back, ultimately, for anybody who believes in evolution, we all came from one. So, of course, the further back you go, the more connected you are, but I find it really interesting when we go back and we start to see these similarities. So what were you doing in Turkey?
Well, Turkey was actually a tour. We had 25 guests with us. And the main thing was to look at the ancient sites. The most famous one,
Petra, of course,
that's in the news now is called Göbekli Tepe. And it's a series of very tall T-shaped pillars. They began excavations in the 1990s, and they've been able to carbon date it back to 11,500 years ago. So it's the main thing that it shows us is that advanced communities, or at least society, had to exist at that time to do a construction of that nature. So that means that they had to have had agriculture and probably animal husbandry. So that makes civilized society go back twice as far as was previously thought, because previously it was thought that the Sumerians and the Egyptians were the oldest cohesive civilizations, but Göbekli Tepe says it's older. In terms of the way it was built, it's actually kind of crude, but there is another location called Hattusha that we went to, and I was very surprised to see that it's megalithic in nature. It was the center of the Hittites, I think 3,500 years ago. But again, I saw lots and lots of examples of very advanced high technology being involved in its construction.
In the case of Göbekli Tepe, where it's really sort of so old that it reset what mainstream archaeology was thinking about how old civilization was, this is a loose understanding that I've grabbed from things. Doesn't it butt right up against the Ice Age and sort of leave us with the impression that it probably went, that society must have gone on before the Ice Age for them to do this? Or, because it seems like the timing is pretty close.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. Again, a number of scientists and other researchers are finding more and more evidence of this series of cataclysms that happened from 12,700 to 11,600 years ago. And so if Göbekli Tepe is 11,500 years ago, it means it was built just after the end of all of these cataclysmic events.
You know, that brings me back to Egypt and the time frames. One thing in your lecture that I was seeing was that you were talking about how fast they would have had to have moved the megalithic stones to build the pyramids in order to have it built in the time frame that modern archaeology thinks that it was built in.
Right.
Can you explain that to us again? I found that to be somewhat mind-blowing.
Well, it is, and again, it's an ongoing study. I saw a video recently by, I believe, a German team of geologists who took samples from the Great Pyramid and then compared them to the Giza Plateau, which is all limestone, and then they compared as well with three different quarries located in Cairo, which is across the Nile River, and they believe that almost all of the limestone of the Great Pyramid came from Cairo. So that means not only did you have to cut and move 2,300,000 to 2,500,000 multi-ton blocks and put them into place with a very tight fit. But now you have to add in the fact that each one of those stones had to cross the Nile. And so if the Great Pyramid itself was built in 25 years, which is the consensus more or less, that means every stone would have to be cut, moved across the Nile, moved onto the Giza Plateau, and be set into place every 2 minutes.
Wow. And that was the mind-blowing thing for me, because, like, that's a lot of people.
It's simply impossible.
I mean, how many barges would you have on the Nile to be able to move these back and forth? And it would take you probably half an hour to move a barge from one side of the Nile to the other.
So, cutting and setting into place with precision in 2 minutes is impossible by standard methods.
All right, Brian. Well, we're coming up on the end of the show here. I guess you have some tours coming up. What tours you got coming up?
Well, we have our annual tour of Egypt in March, and then right after that, we're going to study megalithic aspects in Jerusalem and Israel, which are relatively recent discoveries. And then in June and August and November, we're doing major tours of Peru and Bolivia. And also I'll be at a UFO conference in Laughlin, Nevada in February, and Contact in the Desert in Indian Wells, California, in late May, early June.
Sounds great. And where can our listeners find out more about you?
Everything is on my website, which is hiddeninkatours.com.
All right. And then, our conversation here has prompted some other stuff. So next time you got some free time, I would love to have you on again because, it was in the news here in the past year or two. They keep trying to find more pyramids sort of hidden
in the jungle.
In jungles, yeah. And under, Bolivia or something? They're saying that a mountain is actually a pyramid. I would just love to have you on to talk about
some recent discoveries.
Yeah, recent discoveries and really why pyramids across the board or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Brian, for being on the show. You've been listening to Brian Forrester here on Radio Wasteland. Check us out next time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.